Hello and welcome back to another Let's Backflip Show Happy Hour. I'm Ryan. I'm recording all of these together. I should probably ask Luke if they're any good, just to get some feedback, you know, some creative, cyclical, constructive criticism in order to improve them. You know, I'm pretty sure I'm at the point where I do the intro and then we have another intro because we're going live. I don't know. You have to let me know how that works, Luke. That's a test to see if he's actually listening to these. But this week, it's super fun. We're not just getting nerdy and talking PPC, pay-per-click advertising. We're hanging out with Steve Kroll, president, and Jordan Meyer, founder and CEO of Granular. They are a digital company, I believe, based in Milwaukee. You'll learn more in the podcast. I forget. My memory's terrible. But we explore the mysterious world of PPC and what it's like to be a digital agency. We kind of grill them like, what do you do here? What do you do here? It's great because like we do our own digital marketing. We also provide digital marketing for other people and we've hired people to do digital marketing for us. So it's really fun just to kind of see the scope of what people do, how they do it, why they do it, and just hang out and talk with some awesome dudes who run their own business, kind of like we are. So, I mean, we run our own business. I don't know if we're awesome dudes. That verdict is still out. So we'll figure that out eventually. In any event, what episode is this? Episode 76 with the Granular, the guys at Granular. Let's get granular. Okay. We're just petering out. Let's see how long I can just keep this going. Just kidding. This is episode 76. Let's do the thing. Hello and welcome back to another Backflip Happy Hour. I'm Ryan Fring, co-creative director here at Backflip and Lord of the Podcast, self-titled. If you are listening in your podcast app, thank you for joining us in the audio. We'll try to keep it audio-based and not visual. We'll describe everything in sweet, sweet, succulent details. As always, I'm joined by co-conspirator, co-creator, John Shoemaker. What's up, John?
Yes, John Shoemaker and Lord of the Dance. Taken from somebody else.
Have you ever come to Halloween as Lord of the Dance?
I mean, it's arguable that I'm always that and then dressed as another character, but
I love that. So we got John, Lord of the Dance, here today. It is a happy hour. We'll start off with our drinks, and then we'll bring our awesome guests on. What do you got, John? What are you up to? What are you drinking today?
I went with the Limousine Rye from Dancing Goat. It's a six-year.
It's blended. Yeah.
Yeah, blended rye whiskey.
Well, in as much as it's not a single malt scotch, yes.
Yeah.
It's, now we sound like real liquor aficionados.
It's good.
All right, so I've got Fantasy Factory. It's actually their Heffa IPA. Ooh. So this is in their new variety pack, as one does. You got to be repping the brand. K4 is some partners of ours, so there we go. Oh, maybe this could be some like audio. What's that called?
ASMR.
ASMR. I wanted to call it ADR, but that's automatic dial replacement.
Talking about ASMR right now.
Yeah, and you got to start over here, and then you come around the side so that you get the real full effect. Ooh. All right. Enough of that nonsense. Let's bring our guests on here. Today, we've got Steve and Jordan from Granular. What's up, guys?
Hey, what's going on?
I have to ask, I've never asked anybody, what's it like to sit there while we just nonsensically talk for like a minute? You're just like, come on, get us on, let's go.
No, I was relating a lot to the Lord of the Dance stuff and then cracking up over your ASMR. I mean, so relaxing. I almost fell asleep. It was great.
Nice. Yeah, and you've got some red hair too, right? It looks like, I think.
A little bit. Some people tell me that. I deny it.
You can relate. Yeah. Nice. That's awesome. And let's see. What are you guys drinking today?
Yeah, I'll go first. I have some ice cold triple filtered H2O direct from the Granular refrigerator. located
nice
at the 6 o'clock position behind me in a granular straight, branded pint glass, of course.
Straight from the swamp of Milwaukee, right?
Yeah, well, Third Ward sits on a swamp and it's triple filtered, so we're good.
Nice.
So I don't know if this is showing up correctly or backwards. It is Bell's No Yeah. There's a lot of fun.
I love that. That's such a millennial No Yeah.
Yeah, there's a lot of fun sayings all around it. No Yeah. Oh, sorry. Watch for the deer.
Whoop.
Just going to sneak past you. Which is so Wisconsin, but it's made in... You know, it's Michigan, right? Bell's.
Ah, yeah. Where is Bell's? Bell's, because they have like one of their two-hearted. Yeah,
I'm gonna Bell's. ASMR this right.
There you go. Kalamazoo and Comstock. Yeah, so kind of southern Michigan. Yeah, they must have that over there too. I think the No Yeah. I love that. There's some colloquials that millennials have. I'll try to think of the other one that I have that people say. It might be No Yeah. It's like a way of setting something up or agreeing. It's so strange. All right. So for those who aren't familiar with you guys, let's hear a little bit more about you. I'd like you to introduce yourself. And we can start with, Jordan, since you were just talking, start off with, what you're watching right now, what you're consuming.
Oh man.
You know, in terms of, I guess, yeah, what you're watching, that'd be good. It's
personal, what I'm watching.
Yeah. Yeah, man.
We have been binging Great, or The Great. I think it's just Great. It's a very fictional, historic, entertaining story about Catherine the Great in Russia.
Oh, wow.
From the 1600s. Not as boring as I made it sound, though. So entertaining, you know, kind of seizure of power. I don't know. I think Dakota Fanning's sister is the main star. I'm bad at celebrity stuff.
That's how you know it's going to be a hit. Dakota Fanning's sister's in it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's entertaining, though. That's nice. What we're on right now. And then, Survivor, of course, which I think I watched season one, and then I was like, this is a really dumb show. I'm never watching this again. And then the pandemic happened, so we watched every single season during the pandemic.
Yeah, a little bit of time.
Now we got to watch the new one. Yeah.
What's The Great on?
I think it's Hulu.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
You do some good shows. All right, cool. So now, who are you and what do you do?
I'm Jordan Meyer. I'm the founder of Granular. We're a digital marketing agency, which today is a little bit nebulous. So we're really a paid search agagency because digital can mean a lot of stuff these days. I founded the company in 2014. And before that, I worked at a couple agencies in the Milwaukee area. And then went up to Minneapolis, managed paid search at Best Buy corporate, and then went into higher ed advertising in-house at a couple universities up there prior to kind of selling every night and weekend I had consulting on the side, which grew into something I just couldn't deny, and decided to start Granular full-time in 2014 and moved back to Milwaukee because the one big lake is better than the 10,000 lakes in my mind.
That's a good way to characterize it. All right. We'll come back to that. I've got some follow-up questions. Next up, we've got Steve. What are you watching? What's going on?
Yeah. Hey. So Succession on HBO.
Oh, yeah.
Yellowstone, which is on the Paramount Network, but also, weirdly, not on Paramount Plus. Our Paramount Plus subscription at this point is only good for Paw Patrol and Peppa Pig reruns. And then,
so you've got some kids, or
I have
watching habits.
I wouldn't judge if there's a whole Paw Patrol subreddit where people really analyze things. But no, I've got it.
I'm a bit of a brony.
Yeah, she's
I get it.
Okay. She's a 2-year-old daughter named Arya. And then I've been rewatching all of the back catalog of episodes of the BBC series, Faker Fortune as well, which is a 8-year-old series. It's basically like, imagine National Treasure meets, art. It's an art dealer and a leading journalist where they have people submit paintings that they think are lost masterpieces, which have been misattributed, and they try and do provenance research, scientific research, and try and fill in the backstory to prove that, for instance, a Picasso, which maybe was attributed to someone after Picasso, actually was a Picasso, and it's pretty entertaining stuff.
Now, as you're describing that, I was going back and forth in my mind. Is that fiction or nonfiction?
It's nonfiction. Yeah. So, yeah. Good.
Oh, okay.
Good follow up. Yeah. So it's nonfiction. So Fiona Bruce, she's a leading journalist over across the pond for the BBC, and Philip Mould, he's a leading art dealer. So he's been brought in over the years as an expert on the antique roadshow and things like that. So I don't know who concepted the program, but it's going on eight, nine years, and very entertaining and compelling.
That's awesome. What was the title of that again?
Faker Fortune.
Faker Fortune.
You can watch most of the episodes on YouTube, and it's incredibly difficult. You can't even buy the DVDs. You can't buy it on Apple TV or Amazon. If I could buy all episodes, I could. So,
is it just all BBC, BBC One or whatnot?
Yeah,
two or three.
Yeah, I don't know if the one, two, or three. Basically just plug it in YouTube, you could find a lot of the episodes.
Hop on that VPN, go to England, just watch it on the BBC iPlayer. Nice.
There you go.
Awesome. So, Steve, who are you and what do you do here?
Yeah, I'm our president here. So I really oversee operations, sales, marketing, essentially. Jordan, he's built a great company, and my role primarily has been the growth engine behind things, and he's really empowered me to be the guy to, you know, work in the business to grow it so that way he can focus on the business and where we need to be. I think a lot of founders are not able to let go, delegate, empower. That's not Jordan. He's from day one has been really good about knowing where his strength and skill set is, get the people who are really good at the areas they excel, understand human nature, understand the platforms, give everyone the tools and resources they need to do their job. And that way he can have his eye on where do we need to go. So yeah, I joined up with him a year after he started it. I think when Jordan posted on LinkedIn that he started Granular, I was like the first person who saw the post on LinkedIn and shot him an email. Mm-hmm. At the time, I was building a B2B software company. I'd reached out to him because in a previous life, I had run an agency that focused on paid and SEO as well. And I thought, you could tell by the language, you could tell by everything that Jordan knew. Both of us, from our experience, you just kind of know within a minute of talking to someone if they really understand Google Ads, if they really understand analytics. And I could just tell by the language, it was a combination of the website of, Midwestern values, but like a chip on his shoulder and a competitive drive. Just clearly there was a story there about, you know, having been in the belly of the beast, a level of healthy skepticism from having hired agencies. I could just read that through the language. So it was very compelling. So yeah, I reached out to him. We networked for a year. When my software startup was at a juncture, he basically said, look, I'm building this thing. I'm going to need a guy like you. And instead of a guy like you, how about you? So I joined as a contractor for like 3 months. And then I think we both saw, look, let's throw in and just make this happen and make it official. And that's 2016. We're at 23 full-time employees now. Back then there was like three or four of us. So yeah.
Wow. Yeah. That's awesome. So let's see, co-founder and CEO. I always wonder too, like when you have CEO and president, you know, who gets to tell who what to do. But it seems like as the founder, that'd be you, Jordan. Do you get to tell Steve what to do, or do you guys tell each other what to do? How's that work?
No, we're asynchronously we tell everybody exactly what to do at the same time. So
we're really co-leaders. Right answer.
We both kind of own our own little piece of this, and I ask instead of tell. I think that's the kind of environment here. No yelling, no hard management skills. If someone doesn't do something, I'll be disappointed, and that'll be enough to motivate
folks. He just slacks the meme of the angry Arthur fist, and that says enough about how he's feeling. I'm just kidding. I don't even know if Jordan knows what that is. So.
You use the technology. Yeah, use the technology to show our feelings.
Exactly.
Yeah, you had said, what did you say? You ask instead of tell. Describe that a little bit more. What is that?
Sure. So, I just put people in a position of autonomy, give them a lot of ownership of each account that they run. So we're set up a little bit different. That's, part of, I guess, what Steve said of like having a chip on my shoulder. It's, I've worked for other agencies as a paid search professional. And then when I was in-house, I got to work with, in-house PPC pros, and then also, hire and fire agencies to help us do that as well. So I guess I get to see a lot of different environments and see, sometimes it's just like a business guy that's running the show, has never done a lick of PPC in his life. And they're just kind of ruling in a very traditional, like MBA style management, where they are dictating things and, they are, telling you what to do, even though they might not know what to do. In our scenario, I was the PPC pro. I'm hiring people that are just, in my mind, a few years behind me in their career. So we're on very similar paths, and I try to lead people down that same path of really growing your practice, enabling them to know what the right things to do are, and knowing exactly kind of what they need to do. That's where, we can kind of show and guide versus and just ask them to do what I know needs done. Versus like acting like I know what they're doing, right? It's just a different environment because I've been in their shoes, and I don't think that happens all the time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And what's it been like too over the last 2 years? Were you distributed before? I believe you are distributed now, or at least a mix. Looks like Steve's in the office, or he has a really cool looking home. you might be in the office too. I can't quite tell because I don't see.
Yeah, yeah. We're in different wings of Steve's mansion. he lets me hang out once in a while. Nice. No, we're in the office. We are the only two people here. We were primed for the pandemic. We stockpiled masks and sanitizer before then. Just kidding.
That's where all my masks went.
Yeah, yeah. We had a few remote folks before. We were primarily like all Milwaukee centric. We've got this awesome office that we built out in the Third Ward, which, if you're familiar with Milwaukee, is like the place to be if you're an agency or a small business. We built that in-office culture that was really cool. But along the way, as we're growing past like the 9 or 10 number, we decided, hey, let's stop pissing off all the other agencies and stop poaching their people for a breath, and let's find somebody outside of Milwaukee. So we found, somebody in Ohio, and then we found somebody in, Denver and Florida. So it's been kind of a progression already. So we had Zoom, 4 or 5 years ago. We had no landlines, right? We had a phone system that was in the cloud already. We had everything set up. I don't think we've introduced a new tool in the pandemic at all, because we're basically ready to do this already, which I feel super lucky to be in that position. So now, you know, we're even more distributed. A couple people moved out of the city and out of the state. And
oh, wow.
Yeah. And I was encouraging people to do that if they wanted, because remote has worked so well for us over the past 2 years. It's been really encouraging to open up that talent pool across the country and really just dive fully into this. We still have the space. We still meet up once in a while. It's open if people want to come in, but remote has been really great for us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And what do you think about the space moving forward? Maybe this is that personal question we were talking about before, you know, being so remote and you being the only two in the office right now. It's a great office. And, you know, I think our lease is up in a year as well. We still probably need studio space. But these are the types of questions we're always asking ourselves, you know, what do we need? How much do we need?
We're moving to Ryan's house.
Back. Yeah.
Nice. Yeah. We're going to keep a presence. I don't know if it's going to be this, it's going to be in Milwaukee for sure. Mm-hmm. We just want that opportunity to bring in a client. If they want to come in, we want an opportunity to, cook the team breakfast and have team meetings. It's important to me, and I think Steve, to have some type of presence here and still call this our hub and still invest in Milwaukee, from a real estate standpoint. Will it look exactly like this? Probably not, but it'll be something.
Yeah, and kind of piggybacking on that, just about, I don't know, company culture, because I think I was looking on Instagram and I was like, that seems like a really rad place to work, because you guys are so thoughtful, you know, I didn't recognize specifically what some of the treats were, but like bringing treats to people during the pandemic or little things like that. Why? I don't know. Why do you guys do that? Why is that important?
I'll let Steve talk about me a little bit. I think that helps. But, personally, why I do that, I just think it's necessary. And it's not even necessary with the times. It's just a lot of the stuff here is based on, you know, my past experiences and what I was missing from work. I hated getting the Cisco shitty coffee, and I hated the hand-me-down chair that was super uncomfortable, and a desk that was too low for me. I'm a tall guy, so there was one office where I was like crammed into the desk, and I'm like, can you guys just like lift this up at all or like anything, please? And my first job, we had a CRT monitor, which is like the old school monitor, and there were flat screens everywhere else in the world. And I was like, why do we have to use this? You know, it's just like a bunch of small stuff that bothered me throughout my career. So that was like point number one, is give them everything I wanted, because let's get the business in a position where we can afford that and we'll do it. Right. So that's what we did. And then, especially during the pandemic, because we did have a lot of nice like treats and snacks and, we would do happy hours and team lunches and all that stuff, in the office. I was like, how can we replace that stuff? And how can we support local businesses? So a lot of the treats that you'll see or the deliveries that you'll see on Instagram are from local small businesses. Like one of my favorite restaurants, Bray's, right? They were like shut down. No one can go there. They started doing deliveries. And then we were like, hey, can you put together some gift boxes for us? So one of them was a breakfast kit, farm fresh eggs, farm fresh bacon, butter, jam, bakery from them. And, we delivered that to the whole team. Other things are like, my wife is an awesome baker. So like she'll bake, birthday treats for everybody, like whatever is their favorite thing. From, pie to, cookies to whatever, like she'll figure it out and bake them. So I don't know. It's just one of those things, like if you can do it, why not do it? That's just kind of my mentality. And if it makes somebody happy for a couple minutes, it's worth it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Steve, what are your thoughts on that? Why is culture important?
Yeah. I've always looked at, there's three components of culture. There's a lot of the stuff that Jordan has talked about and we've done, which I think if you really peel it back, it just shows what your values are. So prior to the pandemic, granular, we invest in the office space, great desk, great chair, audio, visual, fully stacked snacks, lots of team outings, team lunches, happy hours. You know, I think a lot of times people come in and they have almost derisively said, oh, well, the culture's, why have a ping pong table if someone doesn't use it? Why have all these snacks if, you know, people aren't going to use it? If that's the only thing, well, that was like a, we want to do it because A, it helps reduce some friction for the team and it makes the day a little easier. And it's like a qualitative component. It's like hard to measure the value of it, but people clearly valued it. Number two, there's the do people feel like they have the knowledge they need to do their job, the resources they need? Do they know how success is defined? Do they respect the person that is leading them, working with them? Do they have clients that they like? Do they feel like the work they're doing is meaningful, has impact? And I think that's something we've been very deliberate about. You know, some organizations are really good at that first kind of leg of the stool, but bad at the second. I think that's, you know, you can't do one or the other. So we really focused there as well, just because that was important. And that really comes with being really thoughtful about the type of clients you go for, how you set expectations in the sales process, how you push back on little things over time. You know, people, I think it's gotten to be very in vogue to say you need to tell clients no all the time. You always need to push back. It's more you just have to have an equilibrium and a balance based on what people want to be reasonable and knowing where there are soft lines in the sand versus like the hard lines in the sand. And the third is the compensation component, right? And I think we're granular, the, you know, the mix that we've had, you know, we were really good at all three of those as far as, you know, the culture, office perks, the management and the tools and the training and then the compensation. And so I think with the pandemic, it was just a natural extension of what our values were. And if you viewed that as an expense or an investment, you know, a lot of people are complaining and about how hard it's like impossible to find people. You can't, you help wanted, people don't want to work. We've got job postings. We're even saying, you know, how much you can make and we can't get people. And I think the, we're very aware of that. We know how hard it is to hire, but, our approach of let's really focus on retention. You know, the people you have that are here are the biggest advocates. You know, they're going to want to, if they see the organization's leaning into them pre-pandemic, that they value that. But even more so, I think it said a lot how you treated your employees during the pandemic. And I think from the business operations standpoint, my emphasis was how do we market and sell as much as possible? Because getting more business and generating more revenue doesn't solve all problems, but it solves the money problems. Mm-hmm. And so we knew, all right, you can't just do all the little perks alone. If you really focus on let's really promote ourselves, solve problems, win a lot of new business, take care of clients, ask for referrals, that it makes it even easier for us to do above and beyond what we were doing pre-pandemic for taking care of employees when they're at home, being thoughtful about, you know, bring your office chair at home. We'll make sure internet's good. We'll make sure audio's good. We'll bring you your favorite treat or snack. And then the compensation component, I mean, granular, we paid out 100% of all bonuses, gave raises to everyone on our team, didn't furlough a single person, gave multiple promotions. To me, that's, and all the while we had clients who were singing our praises because of the great work that our team was doing. So I think that all works together. And I think that's, to me, what I really think of as culture. It's when people say, oh, it's not any of that other stuff, or it's only compensation, or it's only the management. Well, it's all three. And we're playing defense by playing offense when it comes to talent culture and what we're looking to build. And I really view that that's our culture is our X factor, and I think articulating it like we have is like the closest we've gotten to talking about what culture means to us.
Yeah, I love that.
I've heard some things too in some business write-ups about, you know, just kind of encouraging people to think about, you can't, this is what you're saying too, you can't just put a ping pong table in and have snacks and stuff and then be like, there, we've got culture, you know?
Now get back to work.
It's a fun place, yeah. And then not have good communication, not have that, like, you know, that dynamic between employees that feel like they can work together, they can work with their superiors, you know, good client interaction and things like, and there's a lot of companies that I think see the exciting things, you know, that the likes of Google are doing and, you know, all the big companies like, ooh, we want to be like Google and Twitter and Facebook, Meta. and yeah, I don't know if they're listening. So but
they are.
It's like, you know,
they put those things in and then they don't shift anything else. And they're like, why aren't people coming here? Why aren't they staying? What's going on? Mm-hmm.
100%. And I experienced that at Best Buy. So we had a game room. It was probably as big as our office here. Pool table, ping pong table, all the gaming systems that you would see, like, I don't even know where else they would be, but, you know, it was like a kiosk with a TV with the controllers locked in. We had everything because it's Best Buy. And I went down to play foosball with one of my coworkers, and we were both fairly new. And then we got back, and it was like during lunch too. And we were the only people playing any game. It was like a ghost town there. And then we got back to the desk, and some of the OG folks were like, yeah, people don't really play that. The managers don't like it. So that was the one game of foosball I played the entire time I was at Best Buy. Like, and every time I would walk past that huge game area, it was just like a museum. Like, no one touched it. It was crazy.
Yeah, it's like lip service as opposed, you know, talking the talk but not walking the walk. And that's interesting too. Like, so our makeup, John and I founded the company in 2009 just as a video production company. And then I don't know, about 5 years ago, 6 years ago, we added web because people weren't doing anything useful with their videos. They didn't know how to market them. So we started adding some of those ancillary, services in to provide that support and really make sure that this ad spend, this expense, this significant expense of video was actually being used to the fullest extent that we could help them with, or that, you know, they could use it for. And around that time too, we brought on an MBA. You know, we brought on a business person who's worked in Wall Street, worked at big corporations, you know, helping kind of get their organization organized again and moving in the right direction. And so he definitely had some different perspective than what John and I kind of had. John's worked at a few different editing shops, and I kind of worked through software before we started the company. So I was working at software companies, and that whole mentality, you know, the agile framework and beanbags and all that was kind of becoming a thing, you know, whatever, 15 years ago. And so I was like, ooh, that looks like how you can be successful. So we need to have snacks and we need to do these things. So I was partially imitating, you know, without kind of understanding fully what that meant. And the MBA we brought in was like, oh, we don't need to do that. That's unnecessary. You know, cause he had this experience that was drastically different in industries that were drastically different. However, you know, those two kind of like just different views have allowed us to have these conversations that we've made the workspace a lot better. Like, okay, well, why are we doing this? You know, that was the first question we asked. Is it effective? What do people want? Do people even want this or not? You know, and so then we did kind of fine tune it and we tweaked it. And, you know, we kind of have some of those things as well. And like Max, our recent hire, who was a previous hire, who worked for a client who produced a YouTube show that we were producing. We hired him. He was the sole contractor for that. And then they hired him away from us. And then when we had a position open back up, he came back to us. So it's kind of like a Disney fairy tale.
And his name is Mac.
Max. Yeah.
Max. Sorry. Okay.
Oh, I get the joke. Yeah. No, his name is
no,
Steve.
No. Actually, because I think Steve and I are looking at each other. We also had a Mac and left and came back. So I thought Mac, M-A-C.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's close enough. As long as he's Mac-a-million, because this is a Maximilian. but he was just commenting. He's like, it's so nice. You know, it's just a little thing. Like, you know, we go grocery shopping and grab some little things. He's like, it's so nice. Like, we get nice coffee and we get, you know, little snacks and we occasionally have food. Because at his previous work, he wasn't doing that at his wife's work, or maybe it's our friend's spouse. They were saying that they're not going to provide chairs anymore. This is the state of Wisconsin, one of the departments at the Capitol. Like, they're not providing chairs for people anymore because of expense, or I don't know why. And I'm like, how in the world can you not provide a chair? You know, and like you were saying earlier, through the pandemic, we did the same thing of like, we love this team. Let's do everything we can to keep them. Even if it's like, you know, we'll reduce our compensation to some degree to try to keep, you know, keep that going as long as possible, and work with them on whatever's needed so we don't have to impact them. And we didn't have to do any of that. We didn't have to reduce anything. People still got bonuses. We were able to rock because luckily all this digital stuff meant, hey, we could still do stuff from home. But that really resonates what you're talking about creating that culture that people want to be at. And I think for us, because we're just kind of making it up, we haven't worked at agencies. It's great to talk with people like you guys who've worked at other places. And now, like, we have a staff of eight or seven now. We're going to be hiring soon. But, you know, you guys kind of at that next size, just hearing what you're doing and what you're finding successful is great. And part of why I love these conversations.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like you're doing the right stuff too. And it just shows that a person is in charge versus a robot, right? Like, oh, you actually want fresh food and coffee in the office? That's what a novel idea. Let's write a business plan around why that's important. No, you just do it. You just go to Target and get a big basket of stuff and bring it back. Like, it seems like common sense, but there are so many people that don't do it.
Well, let's talk about a person versus a robot for a minute, because I think this is a great tie-in, and maybe I mean, Ryan will take it where he wants to, but it could be a segue to the next section of
segue. I lost you there for a second. Okay, now I got you back. Nope, still lost you.
Experience.
Right. Wait.
Yeah. Stop watching videos.
Yeah, yes, I got you back now.
All right.
I can hear you. Your audio is out of sync, but we can hear you.
Okay. The analytics, the data part of all of this, combined with where is the intersection with the people, you know, so you can get the on paper, the best person, you know, for this role, but then how do they work in the team? You know, can they work together with this team? In the work that we do, the output of the work on paper, this work can be, you know, all the things that it needs to be, but then in the real world with people, it's not performing the way that we thought it would. So yeah, I mean, that's the side of it where I always feel optimistic despite our lack of like industry experience. You know, I'm like, well, all we have to go on is just what we see happening. And, you know, we don't, in some way, we're not burdened by, well, this is how we're supposed to be doing it.
Yeah, it's a little nebulous for us. So, you know, we create something and we're like, what is success? And, you know, defining that with the client is often different for every client. And we have had one client that was like, okay, our previous productions got this many views. If we get this many views, that'll be a success. And we smashed through that and, you know, we're able to do more work. But a lot of it's anecdotal for us A lot of it's like, okay, we know that we need marketing in this space because we're not in there, but we're not sure why or how to do it. And so it's always a little bit weird. So what I'll take that segue and, you know, how do you guys approach it? Obviously with PPC and analytics, you can probably point to numbers to a large degree, but do you find yourself running into kind of anecdotal stuff too? Cause like we're talking about culture, it's about, you know, anecdotal brand or the feeling, or, you know, you do it cause it's right, not because we're going to get, you know, 5% more productivity, even though things like that do come out of it. Same thing with the marketing. You know, a lot of what we're doing in selling is brand equity and identity. And so it's like, oh yeah, well, people noticed you more and you've gotten some more phone calls and some more leads, but that amounts to a handful of things, handful of instances. So that's a long, long-winded question about analytics or anecdotal ROI, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can jump in, I guess. So again, I am, it's kind of not too dissimilar from like what I was talking about with the culture side, that there's, you don't want to discount like the business side of things. You know, every conversation I have when I get to know someone, they're along a spectrum of experience with pay-per-click and Google Ads and analytics. On the one extreme, they know nothing. On the other extreme, they know everything. Most people we talk to are in the middle. So mm-hmm. you always have to establish, you know, the business context side of things, and understanding everything we're going to be talking about and proposing has to make sense from a narrative and traditional like finance standpoint. But there's an emotional component too. And then there's the data side of things. You can't be too light in saying, well, look, big picture, we'll figure out all the details. Like those are less important to get into. Like we make the case, no, the details actually are important. And understanding the plan and the tactics, it's even if we're telling you directionally where things are going to get end up and not be too obsessed about the specific, well, we forecast here's a low and high end range of how many conversions are going to be yielded from these channels, depending on this time of day and the weather and these devices. Like, I think it's important for them to understand, and it walking through our process and approach helps understand, all right, the thought process and thoughtfulness of being able to combine understanding our business objectives, our goals, the emotional component of what our owner or leadership cares about from a emotional standpoint, that people will say that doesn't matter. I guess they just don't work with a lot of win a lot of business, because that's an important piece to not discount that there's a big emotional component a lot of times that you have to tie in what you're doing, but you need to make sure the math checks out. And like we don't ever want to get hired just because, hey, Jordan and Steve, I golf with them, or we have lake houses next to each other or whatever. That we want them to hire us because they see, wow, we're getting a team that is combining. They have the business understanding and context, but they are also really are well-versed in all of these channels, and they really, they've walked us through the process of how it's going to work. You ultimately don't know until you implement it. There's so many factors that will determine if it's going to be successful or not. But I think that that's important and something we talk about. Like, again, we've had conversations where you feel you're having to have meeting after meeting and more data that you're pulling from Google and Facebook and LinkedIn and, you know, scenario forecasting where you're like, all right, well, I think that they're either just looking for an excuse to, or to not hire us. Right. And no amount of reams of information we're going to provide are going to make it make sense. And the inverse, there's certain people where, they just have a gut feel component saying, look, I trust that it's hard. Here's for every dollar I spend, it needs to yield X, or this will make me money 6 months from now. And we're going to track awareness, and this is not just going to be blowing money on impressions. I trust that you guys are going to make sure it makes sense from an analytics standpoint, work with my team. to make that happen. So not sure if that addresses your question directly, but that's how I guess I interpreted and chose to answer.
I like that, the way you wrapped it up there, but that's how I chose to answer. So, it's such a difficult line, because like you're acknowledging as well, there are those components that, and the way I phrased it was anecdotal versus analytic, things that are anecdotal. And then obviously it's got to, like you said, it's got to make sense for the budget. It's got to make sense, to some degree. Otherwise you're just throwing away money and not, you know, you don't have any goals. You're just like, I need to do that PPC. Well, what do you want to achieve by it? Or for us, I know we need a video, or we need a website, or, you know, well, why? What are we trying to do? And do you really want to spend this much money on something that, you know, is not going to give you that return or the perceived return, right? To get into that anecdotal thought.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I'll jump in too, just to add to what Steve said. I think he nailed a lot of the aspects of this. You know, we've seen so many examples. We've worked with a lot of clients. So like he said, we'll walk in and, you know, somebody's very familiar with paid search and analytics, and they know the KPIs that they want to hit or beat from their previous KPIs. Mm-hmm. We've also run into, you know, I've got an anecdote about anecdotes. One of our biggest clients a couple of years ago, you know, the C-level guy was at the table. And this is what happens to the bigger the client, the more layers, right? So we got a C-level guy, his direct report, the lowest knows the most, and you go up and they get a little foggy on what this is. Mm-hmm. So he goes, you know, I don't really care about the clicks and the clacks. I just want to know. I just want to know if this is making me money. So, you know, right there, we're like, okay, we know who we're talking to now. We're not going to drown you in data. We're going to show you the bottom line and make sure that that makes you happy. Meanwhile, we got to tell the story at different levels to his team. And we run into that all the time. So, I mean, that just sticks with me and Steve, is the clicks and the clacks, you know, talking about,
is it gonna make us
I'm
money?
Guessing clicks and impressions. I don't know.
Yeah. No, that's, I love that so much too, because that's what our business partner. So Scott is the third partner here, just, you know, a wealth of business experience and from that other perspective. And that's what he brings a lot to the table as well. But he's come up to speed with it all. So I think he comprehends and appreciates the clicks and the clacks. But at the end of the day, he's like, are we getting more leads? You know, and sometimes it's hard because, and you guys were talking about working on the business or in the business, you know, I believe Steve, you know, as president, you're there to work within the business, and Jordan on, I'm sure there's some, you know, a little bit of both in either case, but a lot of still what John and I do is doing in the business, working in the business and on the business. So it's kind of difficult to switch minds. But Scott has, you know, helped with some of that perspective as well. Cause if I'm working in it and I'm like, oh, we got, you know, we're cranking on digital marketing, we're getting this out there, we're doing so well, we're getting a lot of clicks and a lot of likes and shares and blah, blah, blah. And then it'll be like, well, how many leads have we gotten from that? And I'm like, gah, we're working so hard. Or we're working somewhat hard, but it's that good question. That always has to be considered and then has to be balanced with the anecdotal impression of like, well, people are talking about us. And like we did some radio. So we experimented with some radio as well. We ended up doing radio for several months and we got one lead, but it's one of our biggest clients. And beside that, we also just got a lot of feedback like, oh, I heard that ad. It was hilarious. Like, okay, so people are hearing it, you know, we're getting into their mind. Hopefully we can hit them with some more direct marketing and when they need it, because it's not, you know, same thing with you guys being in the service industry. We're not just an impulse buy. Mm-hmm. We're not a, ooh, you just scrolled or I just heard you, I'm going to go on their website and buy, you know, like our, I don't know what it is, lead time maybe could be a year, could be several years, you know. We'll even see people who worked with us at one company and then they move to another company. And 2 years later, they're like, oh, we got to get Backflip in to help us with this stuff.
Same here. So it's a nice snowball, yeah. Right? Because as you grow and continue, you know, keeping the business alive, you do have plenty of people changing careers out there that bring you along, which is beautiful. Funny enough about the radio, yeah, we did a few months of NPR underwriting as well, and it's funny, the music they picked was by Starfucker, which is just a great name. But anytime I would hear that guitar lick, I would be like, "Oh, is that our commercial?" Yeah, I think we probably got like one lead too. It's hard to measure, but you know, a lot of people heard it and they do cycle through. We've had some super long lead times too, and we almost prefer it, if you can afford it, to wait. Like, I don't want the guy that sees our sign on Milwaukee Street and comes in and wants to hand me a check. Like, that's usually a bad client.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and this is an overgeneralization, but one of the things that I feel data companies get into, you know, is get too like focused on the clicks and the clacks. And, you know, my case study that I would use time and time again.
Ooh,
John, that was
critical part.
That was going to be really clutch.
I know he was going to say again as the next word, though.
All right. You're back.
All right. So the case study we did a series of videos for. They ran a fundraising campaign, and with a series of emails, I think there were five, and they decided one particular year after running this campaign that they were going to end their video side of this project. Because the email that had the video in it had the lowest click-through rate and ROI.
Yeah.
And they said, well, video or email one, you know, had the most, and then email five had the second most, and the video email didn't have very many. The video email was email number three out of five. The first email was announcing a new fundraising campaign for the year. The fifth email was a hurry up, the year's almost over email. And we said, well, yeah, but what were your total, you know, what was your total fundraising intake for the whole campaign? You know, like, and it was this failure of them to see the whole picture, in my opinion, to see the whole picture and say, that's kind of hard to measure. Like, maybe people didn't just click on it right after the email, but maybe they had an emotional response to it that they remembered. And then later in those later emails, like, oh, that's right. Yeah, I really should do this thing, you know, like, and oh, this is the last one. Hey, you know, remember the thing we saw? Let's go ahead and, you know, give to this. So it was one instance where like I felt like the raw data did not contain the information that was the important aspect of what they needed to know.
Yeah, and I think the video playthroughs were great, you know. So there was great video playthroughs, but yeah, the click through donation or purchase was the lowest on the third email. But and you've said this before. I don't know if you mentioned it just now, but the sorry, somebody's calling. It's distracting. Reject.
Let's take it together.
Yeah, my brain. Oh, wouldn't that be fun? We're going to answer every call that comes in.
Answer the next call, guys.
We're totally going to do it. I'm going to do it. Challenge accepted, sir. The best part is it'll probably just be spam and we can screw with them. Yeah, you've said this before, John. What was I going to say? The views, the click-through. Nope, lost it. The phone call completely interrupted my thought. You pick any one of them. So the third was the video.
Yeah, it just landed. And, you know, the video just happened to land in what I would perceive to be the lower value, you know, number in a set of five emails.
And I believe we asked the question too, and it's consistent. Like it goes down, interaction and donation goes down, and then it typically goes back up. And that's what they saw. But we did have the views, and that was an interesting discussion because, yeah, you know, what is that value when you interpret the data in one way versus another? Do you ever have that issue interpreting data?
Well, I love this issue because it's actually showing that, you know, the wrong kind of marketing manager on the client side was in place because they don't understand or have the history of like attribution, right? Because video is typically in a very different part of the funnel, of the marketing funnel. It's usually higher up. So you can't, if you've got an email campaign to subscribers or you've got first party data and you're just hitting them up for a donation, that's like a candy bar next to the checkout in Target, right? Mm-hmm. Like that's pretty easy to buy. It's really straightforward. But you're like, you know, way up, creating awareness, creating action down the line. And people have been trying to perfect the attribution model for, you know, the whole time I've been in this business, you know, 15, mm-hmm. 16 years, and it's never gotten, you know, much better. There's definitely not a silver bullet out there, but what has gotten better is people's understanding and respect for the positions of the funnel. So, that person should have been like, or the company, whoever should have been, you know, excited about the view through rate, excited about the number of views, excited about maybe the audience. If you could get that data, you know, oh, this is the right age range. This is the right geography of our audience. The right people are seeing this. We're excited. Mm-hmm. We got a couple direct emails. That's amazing from a video, right? So, I think it's just like the misunderstanding of attribution that, can get in the way of, putting dollars towards good creative and good ideas higher in the funnel. And I think it's more rare than, you know, the normal kind of understanding of these things. And mm-hmm. you know, I think I've been lucky enough to work for a few corporations that understand it. You know, we would, in one of the higher ed institutions, we would spend a lot on bus wraps and billboards, and those are pretty darn hard to measure directly, but mm-hmm. you know, we could do a test in certain geographies, right? So we could launch a couple billboards and a couple bus wraps in Kansas City, and we would go without those things in St. Louis. And you could actually see in search and analytics that the brand lift, you could actually see more people search for that brand in Kansas City. And then it's really just distilling down like, all right, what was different? Well, we had out of home stuff running. And as a digital person, I know that's probably taking money away from the PPC budget, but as a person that wants the business to succeed, no matter what, you got to go with that full funnel approach. So that's, you know, just speaking back to like how important the video aspect is.
Well, and then you've got to try to convince clients, because what they'll want to do sometimes, I mean, I think this is fair. Everybody kind of feels this is, well, it, to increase cash flow, to increase sales, let's just do more of the things that had those direct sales. Like, let's cut out those other things that, you know, okay, yeah, we got some attention from them, but we didn't, you know, let's just put more into the sales thing. And I don't think people realize that, like, there's a connectedness to this that you can't see. And if you just dump into the, like, well, these gave us direct sales, just put more there, and then you cut the other things out, you may end up skewing all of it. Like, the whole thing might start to fall apart.
Yeah, we call that the death spiral, right? So we've seen it even in, you know, take the full picture of the funnel with all these mediums, but even in PPC, you know, we've got a bunch of campaigns, a campaign, you know, running on brand, right? People know about the brand, they're searching for it. That's got the highest mm-hmm. conversion rate, the highest click-through rate, obviously. But then you've got all these awareness campaigns, and we've seen it when we take over campaigns over the years, they'll whittle it down. They'll start cutting off the highest cost per conversion. They'll start cutting off the lowest click-through rate. And it's not because they're not performing, it's because they're higher funnel and more awareness based. and more research based and consideration based. So we call that the death funnel because, or the death spiral, because really now you're just whittling down the traffic, whittling down your potential customers, and only relying on people's brand recall. And you better hope it's really sticky and somehow keeps growing by word of mouth, because you need these upper funnel campaigns and mediums to make brand perform.
Yeah, it's that weird anecdotal-ness of some marketing. And I do even remember with this campaign that I have people who mentioned it to me. You know, we've put out commercials and YouTube ads and Facebook ads all across the board. But this one marketing effort was actually noticed and mentioned to me by at least two other people. Like, oh, wow, I got that and I saw that. That was really, really great. It's like, there you go. Let me put that on the data sheet for you. Let's see. We are live, so we can take questions, not inappropriate ones, like some kind of spam is happening. I think I blocked them. So welcome to the internet, everyone. Yeah. So what's kind of going on right now? Is there anything that you guys are excited about? I mean, that's maybe what I'm most interested in. Like, I also love the nerdiness of it too. We've worked with some PPC folk who've helped us in the past, and I get a little bit into it, and I love the, I don't know, just kind of the mindset and the data methodology, and I don't know, guess and check, and just working through that process. I love that. But is there anything, and it doesn't have to be necessarily anything you guys do it granular, but like, is there anything you're excited about in the industry? Like, what gets you up in the morning and you're like, I can't wait to go do this?
I mean, I have to say, like, programmatic connected TV. I just think there's still more opportunity there to get personalized or somewhat personalized ads in front of people on TV. So I can stop seeing commercials for bladder control and for all these, you know, pharmaceutical products that, you know, don't pertain to me, and nail polish, and, you know, other things that, you know, show me the, I don't even know what commercials I'd want to see, but I know which ones I don't want to see. So that's the cool part about, you know, connected TV and even, you know, online video ads are getting a little more sophisticated, you know, as time ticks here, so we can deliver relevant content to people. So that, I think that's exciting to me. I think one of the bigger news things that we're always keeping a pulse on is just, you know, the disappearance of some of the third-party data, and some of the targeting that we used to have. It's really interesting that, you know, the targeting kind of peaked a year or two ago, and now we're on like the downward path of that, which is shocking to a lot of people in this industry.
And to some degree, did GDPR kick that in the neck?
Yeah, yeah, it's that, and you know, the European aspect of it. So, yeah, should digital ads not be creepy? Absolutely agree with that. But sometimes the personalization is really good and relevant and important. So
yeah, right. Wouldn't you rather have an ad for something that you would want, something for something you would buy? Like, I remember when Hulu came out and it had like one ad every show, and I was like, nope, I still don't need that feminine product, thanks for sharing. And I wrote them and they're like, sorry, this is the only sponsor we have on this show.
Yeah, sometimes it's like, here, can I just give you my data, please? Like,
yeah.
I also would love it if somebody would figure out how to capture the data of, I bought the product, I don't need the ad to buy the product anymore.
Oh, that's an audience you can create in GA that they just chose not to apply to their Facebook campaign.
Yeah. I need it more.
Yeah. We don't really do a lot of outbound sales, but I bought a product for similar to your story, I bought a product for the office that I thought was cool. I saw the ad a couple times. And I got hammered with the ad for like the next few months. And finally I was like, all right, LinkedIn, who's the marketing manager? I'm freaking emailing them and telling them I just bought this multi-$1,000 product. Please stop advertising to me. You guys are wasting your money. And I actually got a couple email threads in with them being like, I will show you how to remove me from the audience.
Nice.
You know, dear God, stop. And it kind of ended. I think I got somebody in trouble over there.
Yeah. Just email us at hello@granularmarketing.com. You know, we're happy to talk with you. We'll get this going. Yeah. That's awesome. So I have a follow-up to this too, but I want to hear from Steve. Steve, what gets you up in the morning and what are you excited about these days?
Yeah, more companies, more people are understanding the value of what we do every day than the previous day. And when I think about Granular's positioning from day one when Jordan started it, which is we're not going to try and be awesome at everything, but the areas we're going to focus on, we're going to be exceptional. You know, we want to be the Michael Jordan of pay-per-click and analytics and measurable digital advertising. That is exciting because I know every day we're going to come in and you don't get better at something without being exposed to the organizations who are investing heavily in digital. They rely on it for their business. Their C-suite needs us to perform. And it's the thrill of our team. You don't get better without the reps and getting exposed to it and succeeding and failing. And I think that's what I get excited about is the side of the coin of seeing our team grow, and you don't grow without those challenges and just the confidence that builds. And then talking, success perpetuates success, because as you get exposed to those scenarios where you're managing, you can't get good at something without in just a pure simulation. You actually have to do the work. And the fact that we have so many reps, that's enabled people know that. And I get to talk to amazing people who give us amazing insight into their business, their motivations, their team. And we can have our group here. You guys get it. You, because of the types of services we provide, you get a window into so many different businesses and industries. It appeals to certain personality types. And I would say, you know, it definitely appeals to me. So there's that component. I would say that, you know, there's a lot of people who've talked about, there's just a lot of misunderstanding around the phrase automation. Our jobs going away, even for an industry like us. I've always had a viewpoint of there's an inevitability, but having just using some common sense. So I think of automation more like a mech suit from Alien or an exoskeleton. Or when I look at what the company Palantir has been able to do, I won't comment on, you know, their ethics or politics, but their hypothesis was we aren't going to build a perfect AI, but what we're going to do is we're going to create a system that makes it really easy to aggregate database and query lots of disparate data sets and make the apples to apples. And then if you take a really talented practitioner, an analyst who has years and years and years of experience, and you give them that tool, it's going to lead to better results. And that's, for us, what I get excited about is our team, you know, baseline, we have to have the expertise and understanding of Google Ads, of Facebook, of programmatic, of LinkedIn, all these platforms. But where automation comes into play is how does it enable, it's not the way that a lot of platforms or our clients and kind of this cynical, like, oh, there's just an easy button that you can press. I think that's a very short-sighted mindset. It's, you know, how can you use these tools to surface insights that allow you to ask the right questions to make certain decisions? And I'm seeing that that's the level we're playing at. You know, we're, I think, one of the only Google Premier partners in the Midwest. We're one of, we were just talking to our Google rep earlier this week. We're one of there's like thousands of agencies in the US, a couple thousand are Google partners. Within that, only 3% are premier partners. We're one of those. And because of that, we get to see where the puck is going and get to be a part of that. And I think that's what's exciting to me, because there's a complexity to it, but still, if you can combine the complexity and the technical side and see the beauty and art in that and the creativity, mm-hmm. And marry that with, you know, just having a strong business fundamentals, I think that's just exciting to me. I see what we're building and the team we have, and it feels really special. And it's, you know, felt like that since, you know, day one, and it still feels like that. And, you know, every day I tell Jordan, hey, it's a, myself and everyone here chooses to stay at Granules. It's like a proactive choice, because it would feel so dull to go somewhere else, I would say, where you're just like, you know, you're used to, you know, having to go against the best pitching, to use a baseball metaphor. And now you're getting down to single A, and, you know, it's just not very, it's not as exciting because you don't get the same sort of challenge. So mm-hmm. That's for me what I get excited about.
And I love kind of your ruminating about automation as well. And I appreciate your metaphor there at the end, because we're always trying to come up with metaphors to help people understand, like with video, like we'll just get the inquiry, how much does video cost? And you're like, how much does your car cost? How much does a house cost? Right. That's a good metaphor to get people thinking about scope and scale and components and things like that. With automation and this type of thing, you know, PPC or data-driven, you know, digital marketing or whatever it is, I was just struck as you're talking about it as like a good analog might be like gardening. Like there's a lot of automation in gardening. You know, you put the plant in and you water it, and you just occasionally water it, and the plant does all the figuring out how to, you know, create itself and grow. And then eventually you get a fruit and it's great. And you do a little bit of watering. Can everyone garden? No. Are there people who can farm a lot more for other people? Yes. And that, you know, that's kind of in my mind what it is with our automation, kind of like what you were saying, as that care and certainly the analysis and kind of pivoting, but that nourishment. Until we get a little bit closer to an AI that scares Elon Musk off the planet, you know, we're going to need humans for.
Yeah. What's the organization, the nonprofit Neuralink or whatever, where it's very, his thing is like, well, we have to race, like the AI is coming. Only chance we have is to just augment ourselves with technology to stand a chance. And he's talking about it in a very matter of fact way. Like when he talks about,
yeah, like it's reality. Yeah.
You have to switch to sustainable energies. Like it is not even rooted in any political viewpoint. It's you have finite resources and you mm-hmm. have more people coming online on the grid who can continue to need to use energy. So just from a pragmatic standpoint, we have to move to sustainable energy because it's finite, mm-hmm. our current solutions.
Right. And did you see his robot as well that just came out? Like, was it a couple months ago?
I saw the limited edition Cybertruck whistle trending on Twitter, but I did not see this robot.
Yeah, you should look up I don't know if it's Tesla. It might be the Tesla. It's like a robot helper. But it is slower than a human moves, and it's lighter. So theoretically, like basically you can run away from it or like knock it over or throw it away. Like he's thought of how to engineer a robot that could be very helpful for maybe an old person carrying and lifting things or doing some things like that, but not one that could be reprogrammed to you know, terminate us or whatever it is. So you got to check that out.
Yeah. Meanwhile, there's other companies just going ahead and making the robots that can do backflips and outrun people and any. So it's like great.
That looked like that episode of Black Mirror. Yeah.
Yeah. The Boston robotic dog. That thing is terrifying.
It's terrifying.
Thank you, Elon Musk. I bought your slower, weaker robot, and it's also failing to protect me from the other Boston Dynamics.
Yeah, the robot dog with machine gun on it.
Yeah, I saw that on Reddit as well. And it's like, well, that it's clear that's just where things are going to go if you've got a gun attached to the back of the robotic dog. It's game over for whoever has the controller.
And hopefully it's not AI.
Yeah, there you go.
I mean, it's goofy, but the part of it that I can get behind is the speed of change. So Elon Musk recently pointed out something about, we went from, the heck was it? He was like comparing some like old computer system, what we could do with computers 50 years ago to today, you know, having these like photorealistic three-dimensional virtual environments that we can like, you know, look around in and interact with. And that was like 50 years. Like the speed of change in technology, that's the thing that is like just fascinating and mind-blowing to me. I mean, we can tie it back into our industry too. It's just like, what do you even do? Like, I mean, Facebook and the social media companies, they change their like algorithms so frequently. Trying to keep up with all this stuff is like, it's crazy to think about where it's headed and what will we do to be competitive when AI can just be like, oh, we'll just, you know, put these things in and, you know, this click-through percentage.
I love that's those marketing ads. Oh, sorry, go ahead.
I was just going to say that's part of what is so exciting about this industry is like you can, if you take a month off somehow, you come back and like half of the things changed. You got to keep up with it and you have to love learning and that has to give you energy. Otherwise, you're going to fail in this industry pretty fast. And just to go to like the super nerdy side, like Moore's Law is that every 2 years, computer processing is going to double. So when you get really, really fast computers and then 2 years, it's going to double. Like that's how part of this, stuff keeps accelerating so quickly is it, is really traveling at a fast speed right now.
Yeah. And it's crazy too, with the Moore's Law thing, cause I've read a little bit about it. There's some proponents who say it's dead, but it's interesting because it's like a hardware thing that like we haven't surpassed kind of the current microchip technology. So you'll see a little bit of a change in like the size, how many like nanometers or whatever they can make the circuitry. But a lot of it, I think, is actually the software stack on top of that. And so I would love, you know, one of these more intelligent people who are analyzing this to kind of analyze that because the hardware isn't getting as fast as it was, but the software is developing at a rate that seems maybe even beyond what we've seen with Moore's Law in hardware. So
to your point, Ryan, I think that's where Apple knew that you could only get so many yields by adding another camera or trying to get a better optical zoom. That's why their hypothesis of software, hardware working in concert with each other. When you look at when you take a photo on one of the newer iPhones, I'm a bit of an Apple fanboy myself, so I have one. What they've been able to do, they knew that there was only so much you can max out knowing, all right, until battery technology gets better, we need to have the biggest battery on board we can, but we know we can't do too much more from a space standpoint from the camera. So they had to do it through software. And I think that's where, you know, Qualcomm and Intel and some of these other people who've been have always written off Apple, I guess, as like just a marketing company who happens to sell consumer products. That's where I've seen the kind of real respect and the tip of the hat is what they've been able to do with their chips, what they've been able to do with software, working in concert with the hardware. And it's, I think that's where you're seeing some Moore's Law, you know, going to the next level.
Mm-hmm. And I love too, I'm definitely a bit of a fanboy as well, Apple fanboy, but I've really appreciated how Google has come through over the years with their hardware. And they're like, oh, that thing that Apple's doing that makes people want to use their phone or use their headphones or whatever. Why can't we be really good at that too? Because they also, kind of had the software and even with Android being just kind of not light years ahead, but usually about 2 years ahead in terms of the technology that they have. Yeah. And then, after that's been tested and the kinks have been worked out, Apple's like, I suppose that's probably a thing that's going to stick around. We'll use it. But I love it now because I don't feel bad with my parents, like having a Google phone or who is it? Samsung, maybe. That's not bloated. It's not janky. It just works, like things that just work. So I love that we can have some competition there too, but I'm definitely a white blooded fanboy. I don't know.
Red white blooded. I've not heard that phrase. Yeah.
I was like, what's the Apple color? White? I don't know.
White,
So we are winding down here. We have a game that we like to play though. We'll play that in a second. I did want to get a quick little answer from you guys, being kind of in the segmenting world, carving off audiences and remarketing and things like that. What's one of the craziest things you've ever been able to do or coolest things you've ever been able to do with that? And there's lots of different ways to answer.
I'll go. One of the coolest things I've ever done is just use a custom audience list, which means you have their first party data. You have their, I think I had basically like a client list back in the day of like email, address, telephone number. And this was short-lived allowed in mm-hmm. Facebook. And you can upload, 200 names and all this private data of theirs and basically whittle down. So you can target like 200 people, but then you can whittle down based on like geography or age to like two or three people and get an ad in front of them. It was kind of manipulating the system by saying, hey, we have all this targeting data. Let's target all these people. But then within the campaign settings, you can like whittle it down to just a few people. That was definitely short-lived. I don't know how many years ago, but I think that was like the heyday of like controlling who you're going after, almost targeting individuals versus audiences. Those are the good old days.
The specificity is scary, but also you're like, yeah, show me crap that I would buy. Don't show me crap that I don't want to buy.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, Steve.
Yeah, I would say something we still do, and I still, I think clients get a kick out of it, is you can sequence ads on YouTube, but also display Facebook based on a user's engagement with the website and based on their path mm-hmm. along the funnel. So for me, being able to see for our clients, you're trying to get someone to test ride a vehicle. Let's say we have an initial promotional ad, then they say that they're going to schedule a test ride, for instance, and for a specific model, and then you can show them that vehicle next time they're on YouTube. And then once they've, visited, taken the ride, they're considering them, you show them other types of ads that speak to those value propositions. I think that's where it's really fun because you're helping, based on where they're at in the funnel, you're matching content and matching ads, based on what their considerations are. And there's just so many different things we do. It's like hard to filter, but that's a tactic. I think it's practical, can be implemented as long as you have someone who really understands Google Analytics, you have the accounts tied in properly, and you're able to match content based on stage in the funnel. I think it's mm-hmm. very effective.
And I think we have all that data, but we definitely don't do that. That'd be really cool to do. All right. So now it's time for something very special that we do most weeks.
Here's Phil's and why.
There we go. Now we're back. So we're going to play a little game called Two Truths and a Lie, just to get to know you guys just a little bit better. You were not prepped for this, so we will go first just to give you a moment to think of three stories. Two of them will be true. One of them will be false, and the rest of us have to pick the false one. Now, you guys do know each other a lot better than we know you. So the trick, you know, might be to try to get the other person to not get your answer. You know, you don't want it to be easy on anyone. And we'll let people who are watching now, if you're listening to this or watching this after the fact, feel free to guess. And if you're right, we'll send you some fun swag. We've got these great little coasters that we have that you can use to keep your desk clear from those pesky water stains. And if you entertain us with your answer, maybe we'll give you more stuff. Who knows? So three stories, two truths, one lie. Mix it in there. Tell it really, really well. I have mine. John, do you still need a second?
Yeah, a second would be good. I'm almost there.
We played this game only, I don't know, 80 times maybe. So I don't know how many more stories we have or more lies we have. So let's see, where'd my notes go? Mine's contextual. You guys probably have no basis to understand this, but it will still be fun to guess. So my last name's Fring. It's Norwegian. That's about all the setup you need for this. So my three stories. I was born in Norfolk, Virginia, also mispronounced Norfolk. We just moved to Norway Drive in Fitchburg. And my family's last name was Nordfring before they came over. So kind of like an ethnic prefix. And they're like, no one will know we're ethnic. So those are my three. I was born in Norfolk. We just moved to Norway Drive. And my family's last name was Nordfring before they came over. I didn't come over. This was three generations ago. And I'll have, once you guys are ready, I'll have you guys guess first, because there's a small chance John could get this, because that was my goal, to try to trick John, because we've done this so many times.
Yeah, I'm gonna say that your last family's last name was not Nordfolk. Like, that's not true.
Or Nordfring, yeah.
Yeah, Nordfring.
Good guess.
And I'm going to say born and raised in Wisconsin. Ah. Not born in Virginia.
Another good guess. I mean, I'm going to say that no matter what. So.
Quiet, please.
John, what you got? I like to think you're shouting at us, not your family.
Yeah. Was I muted when I did it, or what? I can't remember.
Nope, you unmuted.
I had my finger near the button, and yeah, stop it. It's my turn. Great. I'm going to go with the first one. I think you might have been born somewhere else, and I think the other ones are true.
Great guesses, everyone. I think this is the first time I've stumped everyone, because either somebody usually guesses it or John just knows it. So I was born in Norfolk, Virginia. I usually say Virginia Beach because that's where we lived. But the hospital, the
so you've been lying military all along. Hospital,
I've been lying. It's a long con, guys. Yeah. The Worth hospital for the military was across the bay or whatever. In Norfolk, or it's like, I don't know, it's kind of like this, like Virginia Beach and Norfolk is right here. So the neighboring town, that's where I was born. My family's last name was Nordfring before they came over. So Peter Nordfring married Anne Fring, which I have to assume was a northern cousin and a southern or not northern cousin. And they came over and just went with the simpler Fring, because I'm guessing, like most people did when they came through Ellis Island, wanted to not be ethnic so that they could not be, you know, persecuted or get jobs or I don't know. We might go back to it. It'd be really fun to add that ethnic prefix back on. We did just move. We did not move to Norway Drive, though. We moved to Norfolk Drive. Norfolk Drive.
I thought you said Norfolk Drive and not Norway Drive.
Oh, I intentionally made it extremely confusing.
Yeah, I think you were like, we moved to
Norfolk. Yeah, we got Norfolk, Norway, Nordfring. So number two was my lie. You can come find me in Norfolk Drive.
They're all Fitchburg. Lies.
Yep. All right, John, you're up. And, okay. And Steve and Jordan, you've got one more round before it's your turn.
I built a tiny house in my basement, complete with real siding. Okay. I got a custom bowling ball and shoes as a present for graduation from college. I sang as a baritone in a traveling a cappella group.
I don't think
it's tough for me too, because I forget stuff.
I'm going to say you're not the baritone in the a cappella group.
What would make you say that?
I like Jordan's response there too. He just goes, Interesting choice, Steve.
I don't think he built a tiny house.
All right.
Or so could he have built it with
fake siding?
With fake siding, not real siding.
Yeah, it's like a really annoying detail. I mean, I guess I did that with Norfolk Norway Drive. So, let's see. So Steve said you did not sing baritone in a traveling a cappella group. Jordan said you did not build a tiny house. I think I'm going to go with a cappella group. You do sing, and you have been in choir, and you have been in musicals. I know you have a tiny house in your basement. I'm pretty sure it's got real siding. Because I'm pretty sure, like, I don't know, you went to town on that. I think you got a custom bowling ball. I don't know about the shoes. I don't remember hearing that, but I feel like you do have a custom bowling ball for college. But I was in an a cappella group in college. But that doesn't mean you weren't in a traveling a cappella group. I don't know. You were in a traveling steel band group though. So I'm going to go with three is the lie. That's what I got.
All right. Yep, that you're correct. This I thought maybe I'd throw you off by being so close to your own story about the traveling a cappella group that you would just second guess everything about your life. And
I was second guessing everything, all my choices.
It was risky, but I also added the detail of what part I sang so that you'd be thinking about that too. I have a
you are a baritone.
I don't know how much of a house. I mean, you can call it a house. There's a structure in my basement. It's got stairs. There's a window, and it has real siding because one of my friends was re-siding his house, and he had leftover. He's like, "Do you want this stuff?" So I used it to side the kids' playhouse here. That's what all the
just
noise
in case
is.
there's inclement weather in the basement. Yeah.
So you skimped on the insulation. That
yeah, there's no
insulation. It's not soundproof.
There's a lot of open wiring.
It's not grounded.
I was in a bowling class my senior year of college as like a one credit PE class, and I loved it. It was so fun, and I must have talked about it too much because a bunch of my friends bought me a custom ball and shoes as a present for graduation. So. So I have the show for my college career.
Nice. All right. John and I have gone. Who wants to go next? Who's ready? Who's going to stump us?
Yeah, go for it. I was born in the Philippines. I fist bumped Giannis, and there was some concern that I may have actually hurt his shooting hand. And then the third is that I asked Senator Herb Kohl an inappropriate question in grade school without realizing it and was reprimanded for doing so in front of the whole auditorium of kids.
You asked an inappropriate question? Is that what it was?
Yeah, yeah. A question I didn't know you weren't supposed to ask. It was a very big honor to have Senator Kohl at our school, and it was the sort of like taboo you're not supposed to ask type of question that I asked that none of the kids understood. I thought I was being very, very clever, and the teachers were horrified.
Oh my gosh, that's awesome. I want all these to be true. Let's see. I mean, specifically that you bumped Giannis, fist pump. Was it, would you bump him or?
Fist bump.
Knuckles. Okay. And you might have injured his shooting arm.
No, his hand. Yeah. Genuine concern that I may have hurt his hand. And this was before he'd ever won an MVP.
Is this his free throw hand? Because I don't think that matters.
if you watched the closeout game where he had a 50 piece, he made almost every one of those free throws. So he's overcome it.
Nice. We shall not throw shade on the champion. all right, John, you go first. Born in the Philippines. May have injured Giannis and asked Representative Herb Kohl an inappropriate question. Did not know yours an inappropriate question when you were.
Yeah, I'm going to go with the Giannis one, and maybe it's just that detail of maybe of hurting his hand. There's a lot of actual detail in there. I feel like we've all asked Herb Kohl inappropriate questions in grade school, so. Wrong with Giannis.
Let's see. I mean, I have no idea where you were born, so it'd be hard to choose that one. I want to make the third one. I want to guess that you asked an inappropriate question when you were a kid, because I would like to think that you asked an inappropriate question when you were an adult. Maybe that's the part of the lie that is in there. So I'm going to say number three.
And, I think I know this, but also just in case, so one of us wins, I'm going to say you were not born in the Philippines.
Yeah, that is correct. I was born in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, Columbia, St. Mary's. My mom was born in the Philippines on the island of Palawan in the province of Puerto Princesa, came to the United States when she was 18 years old, and I was born not too long after that. So, yeah, the other two are true. During a Bucks fan event meet and greet, this is before Giannis's MVP, you could get down onto the court and take photos, and they would have one good player with one bench player and then one, for lack of a better term, scrub practice squad guy, and they would rotate them out every five people, and I was just praying that Giannis would be the one I'd take a photo with. And so when it finally was me and he was there, it was him, Thonmaker, Miles Plumlee, I was going to shake his hand. He went to do the fist bump, and I fist bumped him, and he went, and the staff was freaking out. And then he, in his Giannis way, went, and he got me. So it was classic awesome. Giannis. And then, yeah, unfortunately the Herb Kohl thing is true. So I was, in grade school, I'd not thought about it for 25 years until we just had this,
The
segment, and it came flooding back as like a level of embarrassment. My politics were talked a lot as a kid in my household, and so I was parroting back something thinking I was being very clever. And it was a very big deal for our elementary school to have the senator come and visit, so it was not seen well. In theory, it should have been encouraged that I was so civic-minded from a young age, but it was not perceived that way.
Never again. Yeah. That school was boarded up after that, right?
Yeah, who knows?
Funds were pulled.
All right. Let's see. Jordan, you're up.
All right.
Also, good job tricking us with the where was I born?
For sure.
Yeah. All right. So with me and my siblings combined, we are over 42 feet tall. my name is spelled with an O instead of an A because of Charlie's Angels. And all of my passwords, pay attention, hackers, are actually really precise finger rolls. So I just line it up and do a roll. It's muscle memory. It's a lot better than remembering a bunch of passwords.
You guys are really good with this. I like it. If I ever needed somebody to tell a lie, I would count on you guys.
Oh, great.
I also like to think Steve's herb poll comment was like, how do you feel about second generation Filipino immigrants? Like, oh, we don't ask questions like that. All right. So, Jordan, you and your siblings are 42 feet tall. I like to think there's one tall trench coat as well. Spelled, your name is spelled with an O because of Charlie's Angels. Also, my note here is spelled with an O because of A. So I don't know what I was writing when that happened, but it's because of Charlie's Angels. And then all your passwords are precise finger rolls. All right, I'll go first on this time because I threw John under the bus last time to go first. I'm going to say they're not precise finger rolls. That just sounds insecure. But if it's not, I would love to hear how it is. So I'm going to say, you know, on the sake of shock value from your clients, that your passwords are not finger rolls. That's my guess. What do you got, John?
Yeah, I mean, I don't have knowledge of your family. So if there's like, if it's just like you and your sister, like obviously, but the finger roll also sounds very intriguing. Very intriguing. But
I even had the prop, it doesn't like, make it believable.
I feel like there would be, you know, like, I feel like you would use a password manager or something sophisticated. It's just like, yeah, we got this like this sophisticated marketing data company, and my passwords are all just finger rolls. I don't know. Maybe
we that's could be just what you want you the hackers to think. Wrong. Exactly. Yeah, he came up with the finger roll methodology. I think I've seen that video. So, are you picking finger roll? John, I didn't hear. I'm gonna say yes. You pick finger roll. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
So is that a finger roll, or is it more of like a knuckle rock, or what is the? Yeah, I don't know what the whatever. Well,
a patented technique is a finger roll, although that's part of what throws them off because you actually use the knuckles.
We call it a finger roll. It's kind of like this.
Yeah, there's the one song that every middle schooler can kind of play on piano. All my parents. Nice.
But different, you know, angles on the keyboard.
It's all about where you start the roll.
I started
exactly.
Yeah, it's where you start.
All right, Steve, do you have faith in your founder?
Yeah, let's see. So I know that. I'm just trying to think. I'm pretty sure Jordan is one of seven siblings, and his sister, who is not much shorter than me, if at all, and I've met two of his brothers who are each, I always looking up at, and I'm 6 feet tall myself, Jordan 6'4". I'm going to have to guess that's true. And then I want to say I heard the Charlie's Angels story 2 weeks ago for the first time. So I don't believe the password methodology. Just unless you use a different approach for the passwords we share that you created, I don't think that's how you generate them.
Oh, lots of insider knowledge here. I really almost got all of you. The password was the lie.
So close. That's great. Yeah, so that's tall.
As long as the
average 6 feet. Yeah.
As long as the lie is entertaining.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. What's great about the family is the oldest brother is the shortest. He's like 5'7". And my sisters are both taller than him. So,
oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. My sister is one of, or my sister, my wife is one of 12. So oh. I think their combined would be like maybe 72 because the girls, she's the shortest at 5'10.
Whoa.
Wow. And the tallest brother is maybe 6'5. And yeah. So that's a good one. I like that. I've never heard anybody say something like that before. So we'll have to use that again.
I've got question for you guys. Just quick.
Oh, we'll take a question if you got time. Sure.
Can either of you do a backflip?
John, you want to go ahead and demonstrate?
Yeah, there's not a ton of room in here.
I wish I could make your video freeze right as you go.
When I was younger, I think I was probably pretty close. I've used this in a previous Two Truths and a Lie, and it was one of the truths. I used to be an assistant coach or assistant teacher for gymnastics class for kids with my mom. My mom competed in gymnastics in college level or whatever. But so I would do that as like a summer job. And I got pretty decent at some of the skills. And I want to say
I 100% want to see that videotape. If I can.
I've landed a backflip in like, you know, on a cushioned spring floor, like where it's very safe to do so. Beyond that.
Counts.
Yeah, I could do one on a trampoline, but not on the ground. And I don't know if you guys have been on a trampoline since you've been adults, but it is hard as an adult. Like I went to a trampoline park here with my kids. And after a few jumps, I was like, my head is rattling, my knees and hips hurt. Like, none of this feels fun. I'm out. Quick follow-up, though. Can you guys granular? So,
yeah, it's a special dance.
We're really hard hitting here at the end. I do have, so people can check you guys out. granularmarketing.com, and you guys have a podcast as well. Is there anything else you'd like to promote that I can throw up a link for?
I don't think so. Yeah, the website, the podcast, that's great. Thank you for that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, check that out. Let's see. Who do we have? We've got somebody next week. I should know this. I should have prepped and looked at it. We've got Daniel Kinney, a local director here in Madison in the Midwest. So that'll be really fun. Check in next week, Friday at noon for that. And if you're watching after the fact, we've got all the episodes probably listed below or above or however your app does it. If you don't already, do like, subscribe, follow, do all the things. You've heard it on everything that you've listened to ever. Share it with your friends that you think would enjoy this and leave a review. Let us know how we're doing, what you like, what you want more of. That would be really awesome to get that feedback. Because we continually kind of assess and we have a blast with it, but we want to make sure everyone who's consuming it also is having fun as well. So you got anything else for me, John?
You got to learn how to backflip. This is something that you
next week, John will backflip
right
live
now
on the show.
With all the workout stuff that you're doing. Yeah. I feel like there's some diet routine that could get you there. Like pretty quickly.
No, my wife's always like, look, this heavy thing you work out. And I'm like, it's not practical. Like I can't do more things. I just feel better. So John will be doing a backflip next week. Thank you, Jordan and Steve for coming on. It was awesome. I got some questions for you after we go off live. So just stick around for that. Everyone else, thanks for tuning in. We'll see you next time. Bye.